All right, everyone, welcome to the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer and Fellowship Line. Those of you that are in the BBS radio audience, you are in the royal room. And we thank you on this evening for coming in. Tonight, we're going to have a discussion as it relates to wealth creation through procreation, reimagining the black man, the importance of identity. A few weeks ago, we discussed a passage of scripture out of the Bible in the book of Luke, the gospel, as it is recorded by Luke in chapter 8 and verse 30. And Jesus asked this man who was demon-possessed, who was in the coast of the Gadarenes, he asked him, "What is your name?" The importance of identity. And he said, "Legion," because many devils are entered into him. And this man is told by Jesus in the 8th chapter in the 39th verse, "Return to your own house and show how great things God has done to you." And so we are talking about reimagining this man who's public enemy number one. We're talking about reimagining, having and casting a new image of this man. It's very important to our world. It's very important to our society. It's very important to our country. It's very important to our families. It's very important to each and every individual, although we've isolated and we are giving worthy consideration to the black man. We understand that as we discuss the black man, we are talking about all of humanity, and he is worthy of discussion. So tonight we're going to talk about the importance of identity. We're going to take a look at some historical reflex, and revisions, or should I say, unrevising what has been revised in history, because much of our history has been revised. And Jesus said in another passage, he said, "And you shall know the truth." And the truth, and many people often say, will set you free, but that's not what he said. He said, "And you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." And interestingly enough, when Jesus says this in the Gospel of St. John, chapter 8, and verse number 32, verse number 33 mentions something that's quite odd. They said something to him, they answered him, "Listen, and we be Abraham's seed, and were never in bondage to any man. How say you? You shall be made free." Now, how is it that truth and freedom are inextricably tied into identity? In the minds of the people that heard Jesus when he told them, "You'll know the truth and the truth will make you free," immediately their recourse and response was, "We are Abraham's seed. We know our identity. We were never in bondage to any man. So how shall you say, how shall you say, you shall be made free?" Well, see, truth and freedom go together. Anytime you move in any levels of falsehood, especially as it relates to who you are, then you are moving in bondage. If anyone can steal, exchange, suppress, or control, manipulate, or conceal your identity, or convolute your identity, then that person can place you in bondage simply by placing you in falsehood, because falsehood is a form of bondage, is a form of slavery. Once I enslave you, remove who you are, I can now supplant any culture. Once I've removed and disconnected you from your culture, from your history, I can now replace it with any history, any culture. I can make you behave the way I want you to behave. Psychologically, you are in bondage. So in order to become emancipated, in order to become free, one must not only loose the shackles that are on one's feet, hands, and neck, one must loose the shackles, the last shackles on their mind, and understand who they are without excuse, without apology, and with prejudice defend who they are. Because if you don't know who you are, unfortunately, you will not know what belongs to you. And this happens to be the plight and predicament of the people that are in diaspora from Africa, particularly in the islands and in what we call the sixth region of Akibalon, or Africa, in the Americas, North, Central, South America, and Mexico. We have lost our identity. We don't know who we are. The waters have been convoluted. They've been muddied. They've been scurried. Our identity has been concealed. And subsequently, we find ourselves behaving according to a culture that has been imposed upon us because we don't know who we are. But tonight, there is some good news. Tonight, there is some great news. There's some great information. We have a very special guest on the line tonight that can help us uncloud the waters, the murky waters of concealment, the murky waters of confusion, and can give us some clarity, perspective, and with academic scholastic preparation, point us to history with dates, times, places, and people, and bring us, I speak of none other than my dearly beloved Sister Betty Smith, who is chief of the Chiptawa tribe here, which is an indigenous tribe, and we are excited about having her, as well as we are excited about having one of my mentors, who is one of the greatest leaders in this perhaps century for us, and he's been through one battle as a warrior. Now he's called upon to go through another battle. Hopefully he can help us to win this war and we can put this behind us. I speak of none other than Asar Imhotep, a.k.a. Mr. Willie Curry, elder, teacher, community activist, civil rights leader, teacher, and elder. Thank you. Welcome to the both of you. Sister Betty, how are you doing? Sister Betty, Brother Asar, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Okay, I think perhaps maybe she got tuned out. Let me see if I can hear. So everything's going well for you, right?
Yes, sir, all is well, sir.
All right. Sister Betty, how are you? Somehow or another you got muted.
All right, can you hear me now?
Okay, I hope I didn't do too much injustice in the intro. I couldn't get all of your titles and give you all of the encomiums and accolades that you deserve, because I'm away from my notes, so pardon my flesh and my dust, but we celebrate your greatness and we recognize the God in you. The God in me celebrates the goddess in you. So welcome to the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer and Fellowship Room. Hopefully you got my intro, and we're going to talk tonight about the importance of identity. And do you think that is a very important discussion that as we've laid it out tonight?
I think if you don't know yourself, then you can't be grounded in who you are. So, as you stated, my name is Betty Smith. I am the newly appointed principal chief of the Black Ancient Cherokee Kitawa. And the Cherokee Kitawa people were the original people that a white man did business with when they first came aboard, across the water. And so they got lost, and they have been left without even a sovereign nation. We don't have green cards. We don't have Social Security. We have Social Security number, but we do not have citizenship in either country. So once upon a time, the Black Anti-Kitawa people had favors because they work directly with the government. They're the one that the government interacted with up until 1836 and 1891. So they were a tribe that had been here from Ghana, according to historians that I met from Ghana, 130,000 years they left Ghana, the Kitawa people. The Cherokee people came out from the area of Ethiopia 100,000 years ago. They are less than the E people, and they came across the Bering Strait. My descendants were so fortunate, were the direct person that the government did business with, and they gave us an agent that would look out for our interests, because we were just people that were giving them all the knowledge, giving them all the medication. We were the ancient Egyptians, and our bloodline took a whack back to the pharaohs. However, they allow us to exist and pretend that we were all okay. And so we kept getting favors and alleged favors to the point that we were given all the privileges. We were given land in Arkansas. We were given land in Arkansas in 1832 to take over the land in Georgia when gold came here. So in 1832, they did favors for us. They treated us with some type of respect. We were the medicine men. We were the scholars. We were the people that started the big colleges and universities. So we eventually got erased. But there was one man that stood, that held the name together, which was my grandfather. He is from the Quitman County area, Randolph County, Quitman County. That was Leesburg from Virginia came here. In our community, we were privileged not to have any whites in the southwest Georgia and eastern Alabama until 1828. And then 1831 was the first Christian church that was established in our community in southwest Georgia, which is that church is which is my ancestor church, is the marriage between the white British people who took over line, really with the Napoleon family, really basically took over our land in this area, the Bennetts, who wrote the check to secede our land in 1836. So in 1836, a group of men, just like they're doing the Iran situation, went behind Obama's back and signed away things without his permission. They did the same thing during the time of Andrew Jackson, but Andrew Jackson partook in that activity. So what they did in 1832, they discovered gold in Georgia. So they called the Cherokee removal. So in 1832, they load us up like cattle and chickens and, you know, on a farm and took us, and many of us went to the west with the Oklahoma. They put us on a concentration camp they call reservation, but it really is a concentration camp. And then our ancestors, again, were given privilege. So they gave us land in Arkansas, and one year were called a lovely county, Arkansas, named after that Irish man. His name was Major William Lewis Lovely, that was sent directly for Ireland to take care of the Kiowa people and make sure that interests are looked out for. He became the agent. However, he passed. The next agent felt that land in the Arkansas, close to the Mississippi River, was too good for us, so he drove us off that land. And many of us went to all parts of Grand. So we came, my ancestors found their way back here. They called on the Trail of Tears. And when they got back here, the black full-blood, we were the full-blooded people, with the last one they took the land from, and that's the black Kiowa people.
Let's back up just a little, because you mentioned something very interesting here about a 130-year history. Now, that's outside the scope of my academic awareness, and I'm going to have to take your word for the moment and research it later. But now, what I wanted to say just for a moment is not contradictory. Let's back up just for a moment. 130,000 years ago, now, I am aware of Luzia in Brazil. I'm aware of a 90,000-year-old skeletal remain that was found in Nevada. Here you have taken, I'm also aware of 51,700-year find in South Carolina of African people that was found by Professor Goodyear, where artifacts were found. So now we're talking about way before what we call the red man or the Native American or the Indian. We're talking about an African presence here in the Americas back 130,000 years ago. And then, if I understood you correctly, even 100,000 years from Ethiopia, you mentioned ancient Egyptians, and I am familiar with this because of the find in the Grand Canyon. And those of you who are listening, you can Google this. There was a find in the Grand Canyon in Kincaid's cave where they found writings and the name
of one of the figures in the Bible, Joseph, but his name was written as Zaphnath-Paaneah, which is my name, my spiritual name, Zaphnath-Paaneah. It's found in Genesis chapter 41 and 45. And that goes back to the Grand Canyon and to this cave and the artifacts that they found. And the Smithsonian Institute rushed in to suppress this information. Now, my dearly beloved sister is telling me that the Kipewa people are those actual, in fact, people. So let's slow it down just a little bit and talk about who, in fact, are these Kipewa people.
The Kipewa people, according to the historians directly from the Kipewa village, which is the Hassan tribe in West Africa, they were looking for their ancestors. And when he heard that I would be speaking at Morehouse College last year, 2014, he too was on the, two of the Ghanaian people, the Ghanaian historians. One had done a history on Butler County in Savannah, and this one had came to talk about the Kipewa people, because he heard that I would be speaking about the Kipewa people. While speaking about the Kipewa people, which I knew nothing about the Ghana part, because I'm dealing with the Cherokee part, that's my mother's side, and that's how you get your lineage through the female lineage. So I had never addressed the male side of my lineage, which is the Hassan, which is West Africa. And they called the little people like the Pygmies. And now he is the one that this historian, who is now being hired by the Hassan Embassy in Washington, D.C., to begin to film. He's a film producer, so he'll be doing the work, and he will be coming to America. He will be filming our community, and he's been here. I did not realize at the time that we were connected to Ghana. I knew the DNA test I had done on my grandmother connected back to Egypt. But, however, he is the one that chastised me during my lecture, come asking me, why would I put myself as Cherokee Kipewa? He did not understand why I was calling myself Cherokee Kipewa. So later on, we had a discussion. I stated that Cherokee actually means integrity. We stand by integrity. But he said, you're not a Cherokee, you are a Kipewa. And I felt, why he's interrupting my little show here. But he later explained to me, and both of them got together, and they themselves, the people from Ghana, has actually mound that the Kipewa people left West Africa more than 130,000 years ago. I'd like to back up. When we talk about the people in Egypt, the 100,000 years ago, we have been in the Americas. We went to the South America first. Then we came to America. We have been actually in America 50,000 years only. The Kipewa, the Cherokee side. So we didn't come directly from the Bering Strait. We came from the Bering Strait, but we went to also the South America for a while, to what people did. But we have been here in America. They picked some of us up in Virginia, and my grandmother's genetics says that she was one of the four women that came across the Bering Strait, that only four women that survived that trip. And that DNA put me everywhere. They were looking for people that had came from the Siberia, the black ancient Siberian. That's the research of the DNA research. We're looking for the black ancient Cherokee people that came out of Siberia. And that DNA test, you can get that.
Muted.
So I did that one. I waited for that test, and that my test proved that my ancestors, in fact, left this Nile Sudan area in 100,000 years ago, and they referred to us as the Eve people. But we didn't come straight to America.
They referred to you as what people?
The Eve, E-V-E-S people.
Okay. Well, now, Brother Curry,
as you're
listening to this, how is this information making you feel to think about how miseducated we were in the school systems, where they told us that all of us were brought here as slaves on a ship, and they brought us to the Americas, so forth and et cetera. How is this making you feel to understand that your people, your ancestral roots from Africa, the Kibala, was here 130,000 years ago? How does that change your life? What does that do? Tell me what your thoughts are about.
totally, I don't want to just say simply entertaining, but to be ignorant of what occurred before you were born or before your grandparents was born, is to remain always like a child and ultimately like a fool. Because what is the worth of it? What is the worth of anything and everything if your history begins as a descendant of a slave? I've been having some problems with trying to understand a whole lot of things, and they've been brought clear to me. And Sister Betty, I'm sorry about yesterday. My phone died on me.
That's okay.
I can't make a blanket indictment of everybody, but I want to say this. We're suffering from paralysis of analysis. Our ability to analyze what's most obvious and plain has been paralyzed. And for 1,000 different reasons, it's paralyzed, and we perpetuate that paralysis by not trying to find out. When I finished talking to Sister Betty yesterday, it was just like, Jeremiah said, it was just like fire shut up in my bone, you know. And I went and found all my old books, my old dusty books, and I tried to find something that would aid and assist me. Where did I miss this? I mean, the stuff that I read Chancellor Williams, Ivan Van Sertima, and a whole host of other people in my quest to find out who I am. Above and beyond that, I know off the top, I maintain that we are spiritual beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. But on the human side, I have a lot of shortcomings. And I'm just delighted to listen to her. I consider her feet and listen for days because it gives me something to validate me as an individual, you know, as an individual who came from a people, and we have a history. I don't know. It's just exciting for me.
Well, you know, I really want to thank you. Just before you come back in, Ms. Betty, my nephew, my sister's son, who has helped to build and architect this and facilitate this broadcast for since 2011. Actually, he's been working with me in ministry for a lot of years. He lost his mother. I lost my sister. And I want him to weigh in just for a moment. We've had a moment of silence for her, but I'm thankful. I love my nephew. He's like a younger brother or son, but he's a man in his own right and very much qualified. So how do you weigh in this discussion, nephew, respectfully? Reverend, how does it make you feel to know that your people, your ancestors, did not start their history in slavery?
Oh, my goodness. I've always believed that, and it is so good to have someone teach it. It's one thing that it is so often that people have feelings about many things, but when someone comes and put a confirmation to the feelings or the thought that they have, it is revelation. So thank you once again for putting clarity. It's just awesome. Good, awesome, awesome work. Thank you.
And yes. So now, as we move forward in this discussion, reimagining the black man, moving past the 7 or 10 or 12 images that we normally get in black history in February, and we are taught to actually perpetuate struggle, if you will, because we are not allowed to go back in terms of history beyond our struggle in this country as being oppressed people. But to understand now, Miss Betty, there are two other subjects that I wanted to touch upon, actually three, but I don't know if we're going to have time. But that one subject is the issue of the mounds, and the Kituwa people are the mound builders.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about that? Because right here in Greenville, Mississippi, just up the road, just a little ways, is something called Winterville's Indian Mound. And the Mound people were very special people. Am I right?
Yes. And they came out the caves of North Carolina. They're the people that saw the white clouds coming across the seas. They saw the white man before he got here. The white clouds were coming, and they had weapons. And so the Kituwa people began to understand, because they had survived 100,000 years plus, so they know how to survive, how to cooperate, how to get along, and that what made them special. They were able to be flexible. Whatever we need to do, the key is to survive. So the Kituwa people actually came out of North Carolina. In 1740, the Supreme Court granted the Cherokee Nation, which is the black Kituwa, the state of Georgia, which consists of North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi, and Tennessee. That used to be called Georgia. And the Kituwa people lived amongst all the places. They were farmers and woods people and people of the land and earth. And they were the ancient Eastern spiritual people of the Native American. They believed in spirituality before. They believed in the Hebrew. They had all the teaching that we had before. Christian were already extant us, so we kind of married the one that we chose to be in. But the Kituwa people are the mound builders. And
wow.
Based on my
mound builders,
are they actually black Kituwa people? They were the kings and the queens and royal people. That's why we were given all royal family. If you look at your last name and look at who they are, they gave us royal family that took over us. And they needed us because we were medicine men, we were the teachers, we were the lawyer, we were the doctor, we were the scientists. Just like from the...
You mean to tell me that when the Europeans, so to speak, well, I won't call them discoverers, I call them conquistadors, the conquerors, received their papers from the Vatican and from their embassies and from their crown, Spain, Britain, to come here to conquer this land, that they found these people here already mixed and already mingling in the land and navigating and doing all of the things, of course, building mounds. Now, this is information that has been suppressed. This is information that is not being taught in any of our schools, that these mounds that they have basically hidden and taken out of sight, I mean, were actually built by the Kituwa people.
Kituwa, a mound builder.
Yeah, Kituwa. Am I saying that correctly, Kituwa?
It's K-I-T-U-W-A-H-A. And
yeah,
the African put a G on the end of it, the Kituwa.
Kituwa.
But
Kituwa.
Now they're spelling it K-E-E-T-O-O-W-A-H. That's the English pronunciation of it.
Kituwa.
Kituwa.
So I very
the four,
well...
They were the only... You can go look at the history. The full-blooded, they were the last of the full-blooded Native American. They were the black Native American that work around farms and water and mounds. And what they did, they even in Alabama, Georgia border, they flooded the water. We still have mounds right here in Muskogee in Alabama between Georgia and Alabama line, but they flooded the river so that would be covered up. But
and
there
and
are
also
many mounds.
I did a little study on the mounds. The way they
mm-hmm.
situated and the way they were built, they were also astronomical observatories, and they were placed in such a geometric configuration that they caused the cosmic vibrations or the energies, the subtle energies, to create
mm-hmm.
a certain environment among the communities that they built so that there would be a peaceful environment. So these mounds not only served as dwelling places, but they were actually astronomical observatories and configured in such a geometric pattern that it created the subtle energies that made for a peaceful environment, productive agriculture, and it made for a very civilization among these people. These were some
of the most civilized
people.
This gold, you know, many people think they discover gold in Georgia. And in 1832, they removed us, called the Cherokee Removal in 1832. And the Kituwa people, the black ancestors, the Kituwa people, they gave us land in the Arkansas River called, it was once named one year called Lovely County, Arkansas. But that land was taken from us because, and then many of us scattered to the Tennessee. The Kituwa has a gambling casino in Mississippi now. they all the Choctaw, the black Native Americans are coming back alive, and they are reestablishing them. So that's a Kituwa school. They are teaching their language, Iroquois language now. They're now the Native Americans When they finished, they came to America. There were 2,500 tribes, and they found up front 100 million people, black Negroes. They call them Negro because of Spanish. They found 100 million people here, and they were referring to the people in the backwoods because they couldn't count us, because they had not come here. They would not set foot in this community on 1828. And they took it after slavery had been, the emancipation had already been issued. Long story short, so the Keetewa are the mound building, but they are still here, in which I am the representative of that Keetewa, and they're native, they're my court. When I learned that we are the Keetewa, there is a man called Mr. Gord. He's a Cherokee Indian who has a complete disc of everything they did to the black Keetewa people in Southwest Georgia. He sold me that disc. And you'll be amazed that many of us in 1910 didn't speak English and didn't have white man names. None of us are Christians, many of us. So I have a complete...
So now, since you brought that up, that's a good transitional statement. Can you tell us how this transfer of land, like you spoke to me the other day, how they married into the matriarchal line, and how did Christianity,
Christianity came to our village for the first time. The first Christian church was established in 1831, and it was a white Methodist church. And that church was put right there near in the center of the area of the Keetewa that when they came back on their Trail of Tears. The way you want to find the Keetewa people, you look at on the Major William Lewis Lovely. You can't find us if you can't find the Lovely. So the Lovely is the only connection. There were one Lovely left in the village when I moved back from Bermuda to Georgia. And that was my cousin. He was a drunk. And everybody, all the whites in this community knew that only one Native American left in this community, they told us. So then my grandfather stayed here, and my cousin passed the baton to me. He died a couple years later. However, I learned in our community in 1831, the white man set up religion, but the black did not receive. We didn't become Christians. We were told that after they set up here in 1831, got the little survey, claimed to be our best friends, learn everything we know, learn our land, learn how everything is at their name. In 1890, the white-black churches began to establish themselves. And even though they told the Keetewa people they can continue with their spirituality as they had done, they chanted, they meditated, and that's why you find on the cowboys, the Indians, they're laughing at us. I said, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. They were chanting, because we were the blank. Also, the Asiatic were mixed with us. So we also were the first. Buddha was also black, and we now find everybody took over our identity. So but what happened in 1836, and I was just looking at this Arkansas marriage record, what they did, they took off down to 1832, telling us that we got more land for you down some other place. And I have the copy of the Arkansas marriage record from 1837 when they married us. I see all my ancestors, they married off. They married them all off in that Arkansas right near Mississippi. Then they brought us back here, and they took our land. They changed from the Cherokee Keetewa. We became a new nation called the New Echota. The New Echota became us. So we got lost again because, you know, you couldn't find yourself. So the New Echota.
So specifically, the land transfer was done by marrying the matriarch.
They married off the dark-skinned women that look like Indian. They're the Creek women, and they owned this land. So the Cherokee Indians were always...
So they married them in order to make the land transfer.
You can go to and look on the Cherokee, you get more information about the white men around America. They were high yellow, mulatto-looking women. And the Cherokee Indian had a lot of privileges, and they even wrote the Constitution to be honest of the United States. So these people did nothing to be honest. But long story short, what they did in 1836, they took us to Arkansas. They took us to 1832. They took Arkansas. They brought us back to the community, married to white men. And in 1836, they decided we need to give up, they call land succession program, secede the land over to the white. We were forced to secede our land and work the land as free men. We were forced to secede our land after they married our women. our great-grandmothers, and they asked us to secede the land or else. So we seceded the land, and we continue to be free men. There is a list called the Freeman Roll where you can find your ancestors on the Freeman Roll. They were not slave. We were never slave in servitude to them. We, in 1836 to 1891, we were able to farm and work along for 10 again. Then in 1891, they got tired of our minds staying strong. We weren't breaking down. We stayed, you know, steady. So they said, okay, you need to become Christians. Christian or die. You got choice. We'll annihilate you or you become Christian.
Slow down just a little bit, my sister. You were given an option of being a Christian. Now, you mentioned to me the AME, which is African Methodist Episcopal, and there was a way, a division, as you explained it to me, if I understood it, correct me if I'm wrong, that these people were brought in to proselytize or to be evangelists to the rest of the dark skins?
No, they were brought here to gain control of the minds of the people. And what they did was, in 1890, because we had all, they just want us to be Christians, and this is Christian nation, and this is Southern, they call it Southern, the Bible Belt. Georgia is a Bible Belt. So what happened is, in 1890, the sense we had, people don't know this, but there are two census rolls that they eliminated when they started burning everything down in the 1920s. There are two census rolls, the census roll for the Native American and census roll for the American citizens. So they took over, we were the majority people, so they took over, they had about 10 or 15 people they brought to this community. But they had a lot of mixed light-skinned dogs, all the different variations they could just create all kind of children. But in 1836 and 1891, the African American Episcopal was signed to us, a royal family. So we were got, because we're educated teachers, and we became assigned to Bishop Henry Neal Turner. Bishop Henry Neal Turner was a man that was trained by the missionary in North Carolina, and he was the first non-white colonizer to be a chaplain in the military. He worked along with Richard Allen to establish many AME churches, but the AME church on the Richard, that's what all the high yellow, the mulatto looking people. They separated the dark complexion through the churches in 1891. So Bishop Henry Neal Turner, indeed, his name is on my ancestor deed. That's how I know who he is. But the Baptist churches had to be separate from the Methodist churches, because the Methodists were they made us feel that they were better than us. They realized I was one of them, but my bad
well,
side was.
We used to call that the blue blood churches and the silk stocking. So what?
Yeah, that because they did it that way.
What I understand you saying to me is that there is some kind of aristocracy or some kind of echelon of, if you will, leadership here being put in place as a safeguard to monitor the indigenous people, if I'm understanding
yes.
what you're saying correctly. Now, what I
and
want to
you
do,
know what? In order for you to get me to get citizenship, I have the biggest information I needed with my baptismal record were more powerful than anything, because many of the Black Kiowa people today do not have birth certificates.
So the
and they had us thinking
that
our ancestors.
Go ahead.
They had us thinking that our ancestors were too ignorant and illiterate to read. When we learned, I found this documentation with the DISP with all our information, that we didn't even have our, we had no, there was less than 50 Christians on the list.
Wow.
None of the names were telling me now,
my understanding as a somewhat fledgling historian is that there was a time in our culture when we didn't even, we weren't allowed to gather or to congregate. And then when we were allowed to congregate and to start beginning to have church in this country, it was only under the supervision of the master who made sure that that service was supervised and that the person in charge, who was the preacher, was given a particular script. He could preach certain things. This can be documented all the way back up until from the 1800s, as you have given us this history. It also complements what I've studied, too,
and it complements what I've studied. Now, what I want to do, I've got some young people that are in the audience. Before we leave this broadcast, those of you that are in BBS radio audience, you can tune into this discussion. You can call in. We're going to open up the queue and A, and for the rest of this this time period. And I want to say to you, you can call in by dialing 712-775-7085. That's again, 712-775-7085. Access code 568-788-POUND. Now, Dee, I know you're out there somewhere. I can't locate your phone because I your number. So I want you to, I want my young people to weigh in on this. I know you're out there. Roscoe, I want you to push star six or either, yeah, push star six and then one so I can see you. Are you there? There you are.
Hello.
Oh. All right, I want you to weigh in on this discussion as from a young perspective, as a young man. How are you feeling about what you're hearing right now?
The information that has been given tonight has been real. It's been real awakening. It's not hard for me to believe the things that's being said. I think because I am young. You know, when you're a little, older, no disrespect, sometimes it's hard to change the way you were wired and circuited to believe certain things, you know. And to know that Africans have always been here is something I feel that you know, into the education system to teach my children. I have to teach my children these things so they grow up and learn the correct way and understand the real history other melanated people here, because that's all you've ever been taught. You know, when you go to elementary school and public school and it's Black History Month, you know, you hear about the Underground Railroad, Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, give up her seat, and then that's it, you know? You never go past that, and then one teacher might show you rules. Excuse me?
No, that was my pastor saying something. I don't know what he was saying.
You know, and then some teachers might show you rules, but you never hear nothing after that. You know, so it is very empowering to hear this, and it makes you want to tell other people around you, you know, and say, hey, do you know this, or did you know this, or look it up. You know, so I really appreciate the information that's been given. It's been real empowering.
Brother Asar mentioned a couple of books, Roscoe, he mentioned Ivan Van Sertima and his book, They Came Before Columbus. I have a copy of that. I recommend everyone to get that. Also, David M. Hotep, Ph.D., has an excellent work. Africans were the first Americans. Africans, he does an excellent work on that. Mr. Horace Butler also has a work out titled When Rocks Cry Out. Of course, one of our great elders who's transitioned now but left many, many works out here is Dr. John Henry Clark and Dr. Ben Jahankanen. Also, great works for our people to begin to understand, and there are many, many more, but those are some of the few basic books, and I usually try to put them up on my Facebook wall for the young people to go and to buy and purchase and to understand that there is a history, your heritage is outside. Now, the importance of knowing your identity, we can begin to see why it was so important for this system, not being angry with any Europeans, not being angry, but angry with the very concept of white supremacy that sought to stamp out your history, that sought to stamp out your heritage, that sought to stamp out your innovative ingenuity and your creative genius, that you sailed across and came from the far shores of Akiva to, as they call an ancient Kemet, the two lands where the sun went down, meaning North and South America. Now, our presence in North and South America can be seen in Olmec, in the Yucatan, in Mexico, all through the Americas, up and down Carolinas, and even in California. Someone's music is bleeding through there. Even in California, Califia, for whom California is named, was a Moorish princess, black woman, and her statue. Even these facts now are being suppressed by the system to keep our identities hidden for the reasons of not knowing what belongs to you. So when someone tells you to go back to Africa, no, you don't have to go back to Africa. This is your home. This is your land. Just as in the Bible passage that we read a moment ago, when Christ asked the man, what is your name? Who are you? Just as the men or the listeners heard Jesus say, you'll know the truth and the truth will make you free. They say, we are Abraham's seed. We have never been in bondage to no man. When you know who you are, you know how to go to your house, your culture, go back to your belief. The system that has been imposed upon us here is a system to depress and suppress us, erase not only our memory, but erase every trace of our greatness and our genius, our genius. So now it's time to become conscious, to spread the word, to create a consciousness among our brothers and sisters, to understand who they are so they know what belongs to them while we still have time. Now, are there any others in the queue? I see my pastor is there. I know Dr. Mills is out there. Before we bring the big guns in the last moment, I'm going to open you back up. How do you feel about this, Abednego? What are your thoughts on this?
Very amazing. I've learned some more that I didn't know about the people from Georgia. Good to know that they covered all this up, Bishop. I thank God for the lady, whoever she may be. I pray that she continue with us on the line and feed us this profound information.
We have about 2 or 3 minutes before our broadcast is going to end of the hour. I want to give those of you, if you want and feel the need and feel led and encouraged to support this work so that we can continue and to expand our bounds to reach more people, we have a PayPal. You can go to Agape, that's A-G-A-P-E, trucking, T-R-U-C-K-I-N-G, @AOL.com. We don't charge, but if you are led, we need your support to keep this message going and to expand this message even further than what we have already. Again, go to PayPal and you can log in with to Agape, A-G-A-P-E, trucking, T-R-U-C-K-I-N-G, COSAOL.com, and you can make any donation of any amount, and rest assured we will appreciate your efforts in helping us continue this message and to support this broadcast and to reach even more people. Now, my pastor, who is one of the priests, along with Brother Asar, I want Brother Asar to have words now and before we close this broadcast, because we will be in Houma, Louisiana, this Sunday. We're going to meet at the New Hope Baptist Church there in Houma, Louisiana, at 11 o'clock. We're working on some things now, and we're going to get this message out, and we're going to continue to work. And Brother Asar, would you like to have some words before Pastor Prince comes?
Yes, sir. I mean, this is one of the most exciting things that I've been exposed to in a long time. So basically here in my hometown, I always feel alone. I always, as if I'm by myself, no one thinks like me. Nobody want to even be involved in conversation that deal with anything about the reality of us as a people. And this moment is just something that staggers my imagination. It's as if it's Christmas and Easter and 4th of July and Thanksgiving Day and Groundhog Day, all wrapped into one great big bundle. It's a wonderfully exciting moment. Despite the absence of sleigh bells and sugar plum dancing in my head, it's something that restores me. And I don't say that lightly. I won't say that just to make conversation. It's really restoring me. I feel as if I got some tension there. I got some despite the lack of biology, it's a kinship of philosophy. It's a kinship that can teach me, and I want to be taught, you know. So I look forward to this. I look forward to seeing you at New Hope Sunday. I'm still out in the street. I'm going to hit the street early in the morning, and I'm going to be doing what I have to do in order to get as many people there as I possibly can.
We're going to talk about well creation, brother. We want to create well creation. If there can be a Chinatown, there can be a little Mexico, Korean town. We definitely can talk about empowerment in our own community with prejudice, without being ashamed. I want to thank Miss Betty for her wonderful knowledge and presentation tonight. We're almost out of time. We're going to have to bring her back. And I want to be kind to her for giving her time to us. And we're going to have to bring her back to continue this discussion about the importance of identity. Knowing who you are, knowing what belongs to you. Knowing is more than half the battle. It's 90% of the battle. So thank you again, my dear sister. Thank you, Imhotep. Thank you, our bishop from Shreveport. Thank you, Dee. Thank all of you who contributed here tonight. Brother Asar, you know how I feel about you. You are my hero, my mentor, and my model all life with your courage and your perseverance. And now the last and final words to this broadcast will come from the Honorable Dr. T.J. Preston.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be on this call tonight, and I have been searching for answers all of my life. And I always wondered what happened in the centuries that they never recorded.
Mingling in the land and navigating and doing all of the things, of course, building my home. Now, this is information that has been suppressed. This is information that is not being taught in any of our schools, that these mounds that they have basically hidden and taken out of sight, I mean, were actually built by the Titiwa people.
Titiwa, a mound built.
Yeah, Titiwa. Am I saying that correctly, Titiwa?
It's K-I-T-U-W-A-H-A, and
yeah,
the African put a G on the end of it. The Titiwa.
Titiwa.
But the now they're spelling it K-E-E-T-O-O-W-A-H. That's the English pronunciation of it.
Titiwa.
Titiwa.
So I very
the four,
well...
They were the only... You can go look at the history. The full-blooded, they were the last of the full-blooded Native American. They were the black Native American that work around farms and water and... mounds, and what they did, they even in Alabama, Georgia border, they flooded the water. We still have mounds right here in Muskogee and Alabama, between Georgia Alabama line, but they flooded the river so that would be covered up. But
and
there are
also
many mounds.
I did a little study on the mounds. The way they were situated and the way they were built, they were also astronomical observatories, and they were placed in such a geometric configuration that they cause the cosmic vibrations or the energies, the subtle energies, to create a certain environment among the communities that they built so that there would be a peaceful environment. So these mounds not only served as dwelling places, but they were actually astronomical observatories and configured in such a geometric pattern that it created the subtle energies that made for a peaceful environment, productive agriculture, and it made for a very civilization among these people. These were some
and you know what? This gold, you know, many people think they discovered gold in Georgia. And in 1832, they removed us, called the Cherokee Removal in 1832. And the Titiwa people, the black ancestors, the Titiwa people, they gave us land in the Arkansas River called, it was once named one year called Lovely County, Arkansas. But that land was taken from us because, and then many of us scattered to the Tennessee. The Kiowa has a gambling casino in Mississippi now. they all the Choctaw, the Black Native Americans are coming back alive, and they are reestablishing them. So that's a Kiowa school. They are teaching their language, Iroquois language now. They're now the Native Americans. When they came to America, there were 2,500 tribes, and they found up front 100 million people, black Negroes, they call them Negro because of Spanish. They found 100 million people here, and they didn't refer to the people in the backwoods because they couldn't count us, because they had not come here. They would not set foot in this community on 1828, and they took it after slavery had been, the emancipation had already been issued. Long story short, so the Kiowa are the mound building, but they are still here, in which I am the representative of that Kiowa, and they're native. When I learned that we are the Kiowa, there is a man called Mr. Gord. He's a Cherokee Indian who has a complete disc of everything they did to the black Kiowa people in Southwest Georgia. He sold me that disc. And you'll be amazed that many of us in 1910 didn't speak English and didn't have white man names. None of us are Christians, many of us. So I have a complete...
So now, since you brought that up, that's a good transitional statement. Can you tell us how this transfer of land, like you spoke to me the other day, how they married into the matriarchal line, and how did Christianity...
Christianity came to our village for the first time. The first Christian church was established in 1831, and it was a white Methodist church. And that church was put right there near the in the center of the area of the Kiowa that when he came back on the Trail of Tears. The way you want to find the Kiowa people, you look at on the Major William Lewis Lovely. You can't find us if you can't find the Lovely. So the Lovely is only connection. There were one Lovely left in the village when I moved back from Bermuda to Georgia. And that was my cousin. He was a drunk. And everybody, all the whites in this community knew that only one Native American left in this community, they told us. So then my grandfather stayed here, and my cousin passed the baton to me. He died a couple years later. However, I learned in our community in 1831, the white man set up religion, but the black did not receive. We didn't become Christians. We were told that after they set up here in 1831, got the little survey, claimed to be our best friends, learn everything we know, learn our land, learn how everything is set. Then in 1890, the white black churches began to establish themselves. And now, even though they told the Kiowa people they can continue with their spirituality as they had done, they chanted, they meditated, and that's why you find on the cowboys, the Indians, they're laughing at us. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. They were chanting, because we were the blank, also the Asiatic were mixed with us. So we also were the first Buddha was also black, and we now find everybody that took over our identity. So what happened in 1836? And I was just looking at this Arkansas marriage record. What they did, they took off down to 1832, telling us that we got more land for you down some other place. And I have the copy of the Arkansas marriage record from 1837 when they married us. I see all my ancestors, they married off. They married them all off in that Arkansas, right near Mississippi. Then they brought us back here. And they took our land. They changed from the Cherokee Kiowa. We became a new nation called the New Echota. The New Echota became us. So we got lost again because, you couldn't find yourself. So the New Echota.
So specifically, the land transfer was done by marrying the matriarch.
They married off the dark-skinned women that look like Indian. They're the Creek women. And they owned this land, so the Cherokee Indians were always...
So they married them in order to make the land transfer.
You can go to and look on the Cherokee, you get more information about the white men around America. They were high yellow, mulatto-looking women. And the Cherokee Indian had a lot of privileges, and they even wrote the Constitution to be honest of the United States, so these people did nothing to be honest. But long story short, what they did in 1836... They took us to Arkansas. They took us to 1832. They took Arkansas. They brought us back to the community, married to white men. And in 1836, they decided we need to give up, they call land succession program, secede the land over to the white. We were forced to secede our land and work the land as free men. We were forced to secede our land after they married our women, our great-grandmothers, and that, and they asked us to secede the land or else. So we seceded the land, and we continue to be free men. There is a list called the Freeman Roll where you can find your ancestors on the Freeman Roll. They were not slaves. We were never slaves in servitude to them. We, in 1836 to 1891, we were able to farm and work along for 10 again. Then in 1891, they got tired of our minds staying strong. We weren't breaking down. We stayed, you know, steady. So they said, okay, you need to become Christians. Christian or die. You got a choice. We'll annihilate you or you become Christian.
Slow down just a little bit, my sister. You were given an option of being a Christian. Now, you mentioned to me the AME, which is African Methodist Episcopal, and there was a way, a division, as you explained it to me, if I understood it, correct me if I'm wrong, that these people were brought in to proselytize or to be evangelist to the rest of the dark skins?
No, they were brought here to gain control of the minds of the people. And what they did was, in 1890, because we had all, they just wanted us to be Christians, and this is Christian nation, and this is Southern, they call it Southern, the Bible Belt. Georgia is the Bible Belt. So what happened is, in 1890, the census we had, people don't know this, but there are two census rolls that they eliminated when they started burning everything down in the 1920s. There are two census rolls, the census roll for the Native American and census roll for the American citizens. So they took over, we were the majority of people, so they took over, they had about 10 to 15 people they brought to this community. But they had a lot of mixed light-skinned dogs, all the different variations, they could just create all kind of children. But in 1836 and 1891, the African American Episcopal was signed to us, a royal family. So we were got, because we're educated teachers, and we became assigned to Bishop Henry Neal Turner. Bishop Henry Neal Turner was a man that was trained by the missionary in North Carolina, and he was the first non-white colonizer to be a chaplain in the military. He worked along with Richard Allen to establish many AME churches, but the AME church under Richard, that's what all the high yellow, the mulatto looking people. They separated the dark complexion through the churches in 1891. So Bishop Henry Neal Turner, indeed, his name is on my ancestor deed, that's how I know who he is. But the Baptist churches had to be separate from the Methodist churches, because the Methodists were they made us feel that they were better than us. They realized I was one of them, but my bad
side was we used to call that the blue blood churches and the silk stocking. So what I understand you saying to me is that there is some kind of aristocracy or some kind of echelon of, if you will, leadership here being put in place as a safeguard to monitor the indigenous people, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly. Now, what I
and
want to
you
do,
know what? When I learned that I didn't have citizenship, they in order for you to get me to get citizenship, I have to. The biggest information I needed was my baptismal record, was more powerful than anything, because many of the Black Kiowa people today do not have birth certificates. They had us thinking that our ancestors were too ignorant and illiterate to read. When we learned, I found this documentation with the DISP with all our information, that we didn't even have our, we had no, there was less than 50 Christians on the list. There were,
wow.
None of
so
the
you,
names
so
were.
So you're telling me, now my understanding as a somewhat fledgling historian is that there was a time in our culture when we didn't even, we weren't allowed to gather or to congregate. And then when we were allowed to congregate and to start beginning to have church in this country, it was only under the supervision of the master who made sure that that service was supervised and that the person in charge, who was the preacher, was given a particular script. He could preach certain things. This can be documented all the way back up until from the 1800s, as you have given us this history. It also complements what I've studied, too, and it complements what I've studied. Now, what I want to do, I've got some young people that are in the audience. Before we leave this broadcast, those of you that are in BBS radio audience, you can tune into this discussion. You can call in. We're going to open up the queue and A, and for the rest of this this time period. And I want to say to you, you can call in by dialing 712-775-7085. That's again, 712-775-7085. Access code 568-788-POUND. Now, Dee, I know you're out there somewhere. I can't locate your phone because that's your number. So I want you to, I want my young people to weigh in on this. I know you're out there. Roscoe, I want you to push star 6 or either, push star 6 and then 1 so I can see you. Are you there? There you are.
Hello.
Oh, all right. I want you to weigh in on this discussion as from a young perspective, as a young man. How are you feeling about what you're hearing right now?
The information that's been given tonight has been real awakening. It's not hard for me to believe the things that's being said. I think because I am young, you know. When you're a little older, no disrespect, sometimes it's hard to change the way you were wired and circuited to believe certain things, you know. And to know that Africans have always been here is something I feel that, you know, into the education system to teach my children. I have to teach my children these things so they grow up and learn the correct way and understand the real history of the melanated people here. Because that's all you've ever been taught. You know, when you go to elementary school and public school and it's Black History Month, you know, you hear about the Underground Railroad, Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, give up her seat, and then that's it. You know, you never go past that. And then one teacher might show you rules. Excuse me.
No, that was my pastor saying something. I don't know what he was saying.
You know, and then some teachers might show you rules, but you never hear nothing after that. You know, so it's very empowering to hear this, and it makes you want to tell other people around you, you know, and say, hey, do you know this, or did you know this, or look it up, you know. So I really appreciate the information that's been given. It's been real empowering.
Brother Asar mentioned a couple of books, Roscoe. He mentioned Ivan Van Sertima and his book, They Came Before Columbus. I have a copy of that. I recommend everyone to get that. Also, David M. Hotep, Ph.D., has an excellent work. The Africans were the first Americans. Africans. He does an excellent work on that. Mr. Horace Butler also has a work out titled When Rocks Cry Out. Of course, one of our great elders who's transitioned now but left many, many works out here is Dr. John Henry Clark. And Dr. Ben Shahakinen, also a great works for our people to begin to understand. And there are many, many more, but those are some of the few basic books. And I usually try to put them up on my Facebook wall for the young people to go and to buy and purchase and to understand that there is a history, your heritage is outside. Now, the importance of knowing your identity, we can begin to see why it was so important for this system, not being angry with any Europeans, not being angry, but angry with the very concept of white supremacy that sought to stamp out your history, that sought to stamp out your heritage, that sought to stamp out your innovative ingenuity and your creative genius.
that you sailed across and came from the far shores of Akiva to, as they call in ancient Kemet, the two lands where the sun went down, meaning North and South America. Now, our presence in North and South America can be seen in Olmecs, in the Yucatan, in Mexico, all through the Americas, up and down Carolinas, and even in California. Someone's music is bleeding through there. Even in California, Califia, for whom California is named, was a Moorish princess, black woman, and her statue. Even these facts now are being suppressed by the system to keep our identities hidden for the reasons of not knowing what belongs to you. So when someone tells you to go back to Africa, no, you don't have to go back to Africa. This is your home. This is your land. Just as in the Bible passage that we read a moment ago, when Christ asked the man, what is your name? Who are you? Just as the men or the listeners heard Jesus say, you'll know the truth and the truth will make you free. He said, we are Abraham's seed. We have never been in bondage to no man. When you know who you are, you know how to go to your house, your culture. Go back to your belief. The system that has been imposed upon us here is a system to depress and suppress us, erase not only our memory, but erase every trace of our greatness and our genius. Our genius. So now it's time to become conscious, to spread the word, to create a consciousness among our brothers and sisters, to understand who they are so they know what belongs to them while we still have time. Now, are there any others in the queue? I see my pastor is there. I know Dr. Mills is out there. Before we bring the big guns in the last moment, I'm going to open you back up. How do you feel about this, Betty Go? What are your thoughts on this?
Very amazing. I've learned some more that I didn't know about the people from Georgia. Good to know that they covered all this up, Bishop. I thank God for the lady, whoever she may be. I pray that she continue with us on the line and feed us this profound information.
We have about 2 or 3 minutes before our broadcast is going to end of the hour. I want to give those of you, if you want and feel the need and feel led and encouraged to support this work so that we can continue and to expand our bounds to reach more people, we have a PayPal. You can go to Agape. That's AGAPE Trucking, TRUCKING, @AOL.com. We don't charge, but if you are led, we need your support to keep this message going and to expand this message even further than what we have already. Again, go to PayPal and you can log in to Agape, AGAPE. Trucking, TRUCKINGCOSCOL.com, and you can make any donation of any amount, and rest assured we will appreciate your efforts in helping us continue this message and to support this broadcast and to reach even more people. Now, my pastor, who is one of the priests along with Brother Asar, I want Brother Asar to have words now and before we close this broadcast, because we will be in Houma, Louisiana, this Sunday. We're going to meet at the New Hope Baptist Church there in Houma, Louisiana, at 11 o'clock. We're working on some things now, and we're going to get this message out, and we're going to continue the work. And Brother Asar, would you like to have some words before Pastor Prince comes?
Yes, sir. I mean, this is one of the most exciting things that I've been exposed to it a long time. So basically here in my hometown, I always feel alone. Always as if I'm by myself. No one thinks like me. Nobody want to even be involved in conversation that deal with anything about the reality of us as a people. And this moment is just something that staggers my imagination. It's as if it's Christmas and Easter and 4th of July and Thanksgiving Day and Groundhog Day all wrapped into one great big bummer. It's a wonderfully exciting moment. Despite the absence of sleigh bells and sugar plum dancing in my head, it's something that restores me. And I don't say that lightly. I won't say that just to make conversation. It's really restoring me. I feel as if I got some tension there. I got some, despite the lack of biology, it's a kinship of philosophy. It's a kinship that can teach me, and I want to be taught, you know. So I look forward to this. I look forward to seeing you at New Hope Sunday. I'm still out in the street. I'm going to hit the street early in the morning, and I'm going to be doing what I have to do in order to get as many people there as I possibly can.
We're going to talk about well creation, brother. We want to create well creation. If there can be a Chinatown, there can be a little Mexico, Korean town. We definitely can talk about empowerment in our own community with prejudice, without being ashamed. I want to thank Ms. Petty for her wonderful knowledge and presentation tonight. We're almost out of time. We're going to have to bring her back. And I want to be kind to her for giving her time to us. And we're going to have to bring her back to continue this discussion about the importance of identity. Knowing who you are, knowing what belongs to you, knowing is more than half the battle. It's 90% of the battle. So thank you again, my dear sister. Thank you, Imhotep. Thank you, our bishop from Shreveport. Thank you, Dee. Thank all of you who contributed here tonight. Brother Asar, you know how I feel about you. You are my hero, my mentor, and my model all life with your courage and your perseverance. And now, the last and final words to this broadcast will come from the Honorable Dr. T.J. Preston.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be on this call tonight, and I have been searching for answers all of my life. And I always wondered what happened in the centuries that they never recorded. I also wonder why there has been such a gigantic effort to cover the stature and the sense of the spirit that has smothered a certain class of people out of the mainstream. I feel like I'm free. I've known that I was free, but I didn't know the technological trick that was played upon my indigenous family, because we were only exposed to what we were taught. And I want to grant the Europeans for their ability to articulate and put together a platform of striving to understand that they are the indigenous people, because I learned long ago that Columbus did not discover America. And I wondered, where were the Moors? I've studied about them. And where are they? And why don't they talk about them? And I understand now clearly what the plan was and the program that they implemented in order to keep us ignorant of what we are facing in this world today. And I heard the voice of their spiritual encounters said that the truth shall set you free. So when the truth come out, it doesn't mean that I'm angry with them. No, because I recognize that they only got their training from us. They became who they are. They didn't even know how to, anything about, and I studied it, they didn't know anything about hygienics, cleansing. They had animals living in the same house, and they have been able to implement their program. And I give them credit. They're very smart, but thanks be to God. He said that the truth will set you free. Thank you. Thank you, Khalif, for giving me the opportunity just to read, and I'm very interested in knowing more and hearing more from someone that has the connections and the documentation of what actually happened when I didn't know what happened. Thank you.
Sister Hill, did you hear all that? Thank you, Dr. Prince. You know I love you.
I did. David,
are you there? What do you think about this, dear? What are your words?
I'm here, and Bishop, you've known me for a while, and you know that I am a very proud person. I've always felt
yes, you are, and I don't want you to change.
I've always felt a sense of royalty, even when I was a young girl, and I would dream at night. I always dreamed that I was a queen or I was a princess. You know, that I was on the throne. I felt this is what I dreamed as a young girl. So hearing Sister Betty tonight validates that my beginning, this is what makes it so good to me, is that my beginning did not start on a slave ship. You know, we've been told that we were brought, we were slaves and you were brought here as slaves. That's just to beat us down and to make us feel like we are nothing. But we are a great people. And we did not start, our beginning did not start on a slave ship. And those of us who are waking up, who are now waking up, we have to find a way to bring others, the non-believers, to face the reality of who they are. Because we have so many of our people that don't want to face the facts. That I'm not African, I'm not African descent, I'm not this and I'm not that, because they want to fit in. But we... those of us that are waking up have to find a way to bring them to face reality of who they are. And then and then we will begin to see just how wealthy we are. Now we just wow. don't realize what we are as a people and how wealthy we are as a people.
We're about to go off the air. We're about to go off the air. I don't want to cut you off, but respectfully, thank you so much, dear. You are royal. Don't you ever lose that royal stride and step in the way you hold your head like a queen, because that is what you are. Thank you so much. Listen, it has been an absolute plum-pleasing pleasure, me, Khalif Zafnat Pioneer L, and Sister Betty Smith and Brother Asar Imhotep, along with Dr. T.J. Prince, along with Dr. Roosevelt Abbott, and those of you who have hosted this call. It has been our pleasure to have you in the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer and Fellowship Room. Tune in this time next week, and we shall continue this study about wealth creation, reimagining not only just the black man, but the black people on the planet as royal people, as royal people. Until that time, it is my wish that the light of his countenance shine toward you, in you, on you, around you, and in particular through you. Again, you can support us. Push that PayPal button. Go to Agape, A-G-A-P-E, Trucking, T-R-U-C-K-I-N-G, C-O at AOL.com. Your contributions are appreciated. Thank you so much. And now this all-important message right here. Good night, y'all. I love you with an everlasting love. Good night. Peace.
Good night.
Things that held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we'll let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together. We're polishing up our act. Don't you have nothing, nothing standing? I know.